The pilot had already increased the throttle. The boat reared back slightly on a mobile mound of green scummy water and roared ahead. Not fast. It couldn't brake like a land wag, of course, but faster than its walking pace before. They crossed an intersection, coming perilously near the top of a submerged traffic light. Then the pilot was backing the engine and slewing the big gleaming water wag slightly sideways to kill its forward momentum. Using long metal poles, the Baron's two bodyguards halted the boat's lingering drift toward the building. It bumped up against the sunken wall of the structure, using its own bumper of old tires lashed to the outside of the hull to cushion and protect it. The skinny bodyguard with the FN long blaster jumped into the opening where the woman stood covering her face with a handkerchief and coughing, caught a line tossed him by his burlier comrade, and fastened it to a jutting chunk of metal. Don Tenorio was next over into the building, a structure with mostly intact, bluish-black windows that rose three further stories and then broke off. The wide guard with a stubby machine pistol helped hand him across. The alcalde seemed impatient with the man's solicitude. Shrugging him off, he plunged into the building with his guards, seemingly oblivious as to whether his guests followed or not. The scabby woman's face was obscured by the rag she was using as an impromptu air filter. Her hair was as startlingly red as Christie's, but unlike the crimson of Christie's sentient locks, it was a deep red that glinted with metallic highlights in the morning sunlight like fine copper wire. She was taller than average for the people they had encountered in the valley, although shorter than Christie. Ryan caught an impression of lithe but well-padded athletic grace, of jade-green eyes flashing him a somehow appraising glance above the rag. Then she whirled and was gone into the shadowed interior. JB looked inquiringly to Ryan. His Uzi was up and ready, which meant he was too. Ryan nodded.
Let's follow. Eyes wide.
You sure, Ryan?
Sure am, babe. If there are people who need help, I'll do what I can.
She smiled. Ryan helped hand Christie across to Doc, who had jumped over ahead of them. Then came Ryan, and lastly Jack, still turning a leaf-bladed throwing knife in his chalk-white fingers. They raced through a room empty but for decayed and colorless carpet lying in fungoid patches on the floor. Whatever furnishings or decoration had once occupied the room had since been shaken loose or otherwise stripped. Into the guts of the building, the woman led the way, followed by Don Tenorio and his pair of guards, the companions trooping after. The interior was dank and rank with the smells of mildew and stagnant water, dead marine life, and again, a lingering stink that all knew well as a hallmark of human death. There was no way the smell could have persisted for a century. Ryan wondered if it was the result of some kind of psychic emanation, or more likely, simple illusion created by expectation. He mentioned the thoughts to JB in a quick low murmur.
There's not a reason in the world somebody might not have cashed in a not-too-distant past, too. Leastwise, the dust thrown up by the cave-in seems to have mostly settled already.
They pounded up two flights of diamond panel metal stairs with big blotches of some kind of actual fungus growing on the peeling enamel of the walls. They broke out into an echoing space lit poorly by lanterns. The water threw back the dim yellow light in ripple patterns against the walls and the faces of the party. Ryan realized they were on a gallery toward the top of what had been a several-story atrium. On the level above, the walls fell back farther away into a wider open space. Below them, a busted-off stair protruded from stinking water whose black surface glistened with just a hint of poisonously pearlescent taint, as if just a bit of oil had been spilled on it. A curved metal pipe serving as a handrail had peeled away from the steps to nowhere and jutted into the air, its end corroded and raw. As they all followed the red-headed scabby woman around two sides of the gallery, Christie's steps faltered. Ryan caught her quickly by the biceps, fearing she might topple over the safety rail into the murky water.
You all right?
No. Not me. Us. Something here. Something bad.
A few yards ahead, their guide stood waving them through a door. Don Tenorio started to go through first. His bulkier bodyguard, the slab-faced man with a shorty machine pistol, shouldered the Baron aside almost brusquely and stepped through first, his blaster held ready in both scarred hands. A flash of blue-white fire filled the atrium. Screaming horribly, the bodyguard reeled back onto the catwalk. As he turned, Ryan saw that his face and the now smoldering front of his khaki shirt were torn with dozens of tiny holes, some round, some ragged, some bizarrely shaped like the letter T. Ryan had seen such wounds before. They happened when somebody poured a handful of carpet tacks down the barrel of a blaster, usually a muzzle-loading black powder makeshift, and fired them off into a human target. The tiny, wildly gyrating projectiles went every which way and bled velocity like a severed artery. They were entirely ineffectual beyond the range of a good healthy spit. Fired from close enough for the muzzle flare to set the target's clothes alight, though, they could ruin your whole day. The bodyguard lurched into the rail and cartwheeled over it. The clench reflex tightened his finger on the trigger as he went over. The little bullet sprayer was still flaming and yammering when his body disappeared into the dark water with a splash. Ryan caught a glimpse of the red-haired scabby woman standing by the door, gloating light gleaming in those strange green eyes. He was already drawing his Sig Sauer. He sensed a weight descending toward his back, and he started to turn. Something slammed the back of his head. His skull filled with spark-shot darkness. He came back to consciousness on his knees in the gloom of the atrium. He'd been elsewhere for just a few seconds, apparently, briefly stunned rather than unconscious. He felt a quick spasm of relief. A head blow that actually put you out generally left you with a bleeder in your skull that would chill you sure. Of course, chilling seemed a likely item on the agenda in the not-too-distant future. He could feel the absence of his hand blaster. Rough hands yanked him to his feet. One started to tug on the hilt of his broad-bladed panga. A dozen dark, wild-haired men dressed in loincloth surrounded them. Chichimecs. They were armed with the usual chronological grab bag of weaponry, from clubs and spears to at least a couple of smokeless powder blasters. Two of the ambushers held a furious Don Tenorio by the arms as the copper-headed woman spoke tauntingly to him. Ryan blinked to clear the vision in his one eye, which still swam with big green and purple afterimage blobs. It seemed as if there were more marauders across the well of the half-drowned atrium. With a gesture like an irate egret shaking out his wings, Doc broke away from the captor who held his arms. He jabbed another in the chest with the tip of his cane.
You have no cause to lay your foul hands upon my person, sirrah.
The Chichimec stared at him more in shocked surprise than anything else. Then his dark face twisted in a rage-filled snarl. He grabbed the end of the cane and raised his own weapon, one of those flat clubs edged with jagged shards of volcanic glass, to strike Doc down. Doc yanked back on the handle of his cane. The slim steel blade hissed free. The raider's face sagged into a look of even greater surprise. Like a striking serpent, the sword darted forward to bury itself in one of those dark, staring eyes. The Chichimec fell bonelessly, dead on the instant. The marauder who had held Doc earlier wrapped his arms around him, trying to pinion them to his sides. It was too late.
Oh, no, you dare not, foul cretin!
Doc had already managed to claw the bulk of his lama free. He turned sideways, thrust the blaster up under his captor's chin, and lit off the shotgun underbarrel. The blast tore off the man's face. Ryan was already in motion. He rammed his elbow back into the gut of the man who held him on the left. Then he pivoted his hips to drive a forward elbow smash into the hinge of the jaw of the man clutching him from the right. The man uttered a strangled scream as his jaw broke and slid horribly, a hand's breadth to the side. He was bastard tough. Even as he clutched his shattered face with one hand, the other raised an obsidian sword club to strike back. As quick as thought, Ryan's panga whispered free. He chopped it right down into the fury and pain-distorted face, splitting the skull to the bridge of the nose. Ryan sensed motion behind him, launched a savage back kick without looking. The man who'd been to his left went backward over the rail. He landed on the busted-off handrail, and the gore-smeared raw end punched clean out of his bare chest. By that point, there was a whole lot of screaming going on. Ryan had quick impressions. Jack's right hand, ghost pale in the gloom, darted like a snake, repeatedly striking as he threw his sharp little knives into eyes, throats, bodies, not caring that most of them wouldn't do lethal damage. All that was needed was distraction, to spoil aim or to allow an ally to land a kill shot. Christie's hand whipped out, pressing the barrel of her Smith & Wesson blaster into the gut of a Chichimec and fired twice. JB felled two captors with an overhand right and a hand edge smashed to the throat, then spun and sprayed Chichimecs on the opposite side of the well with an ear-shattering burst from his Uzi. The wiry bodyguard had twisted himself free of the raiders who held him and hurled himself at his Baron's two captors. The four were down in a thrashing tangle in the doorway. The copper-headed woman, a tiny black blaster in her hand, was dancing around the tangle, spitting like a cat in fury at not finding a clear target. Ryan followed down the man whose skull he'd split to yank his silenced Sig Sauer from the waist string of the dead man's loincloth. He fell onto his side and rolled, momentarily unsure whether to chill the woman who had lured them into the trap or to try to find the Chichimec who had wound up in possession of the bodyguard's long blaster. His brains had been rattled by the rap to the head. He wasn't quite as razor-edge decisive as usual in combat. The Chichimec who had appropriated the long-barreled FNFAL stepped up and slammed the steel-shod butt of its wooden stock against the back of the bodyguard's neck. Ryan fired two sighing shots into the middle of his back. He went to his knees, then fell onto the still form of the scabby he'd butt-stroked. Copper hair flying, the woman spun to point her tiny black blaster at Ryan. He rolled to shift his sight to right between her prodigious breasts. For just a moment, two wild green eyes and Ryan's single cold blue one locked each other above their gun sights. Then the woman went flying up and back into the air.
What?
Ryan stared. There were very few occasions in his life when he'd been so taken by surprise by a twist of events that all he could do was gape. This was one. A tentacle, dark, striated, and slimy, held the woman around her ribcage, aloft above the water. Others waved in the air around her. She screamed, and she fired the hand blaster downward. The bullets didn't bother whatever monstrous mutie held her in the slightest. One of the ambushers had grabbed up the fallen FNFAL. He rushed to the rail, aimed downward at the churning water from which half a dozen tentacles sprouted like sentient plant stalks, and fired a burst. As usual, it was a bad idea to fire a .308 caliber rifle full auto. The recoil walked the barrel straight up in the air and put him flat on his skinny ass. The woman had thrown her useless hand blaster away.
Makawitl! Makawitl!
Ryan wondered if it was a prayer or a curse. It was neither. One of the handful of Chichimecs still on their feet tossed her one of the obsidian-edged clubs. Then his face erupted in a gush of black blood and dough-colored brains. Christie had fired a shot into the base of his skull from touch range. He went down with his hair burning and reeking blue flames. The marauder woman fielded the sword club deftly. She hacked it savagely down into the tentacle that gripped her below the arms. The volcanic glass, sharper than a surgeon's scalpel, half-severed the leg-thick member. Greenish ichor sprouted, covering her face and chest. The tentacle spasmed, hurling her through the air onto the catwalk on the far side of the atrium. Holding his Sig Sauer in both hands, none too steadily, Ryan backed cautiously away from the rail. Another pair of tentacles plucked another Chichimec from the far side. Ryan looked around quickly, trying to take stock of the tactical situation. It was basically battle over, at least on this side of the well. Christie stood with her back to the wall. Her sling was gone. Her left hand was splayed on the plaster as if for support. The right held her .38 warily ready. JB stood near her, prudently far back from the rail, Uzi ready and aimed out across the well, in case either the monster or the raiders decided to take any further interest in the companions. Fortunately, they seemed to be amusing one another more than sufficiently. Doc and Jack were helping to disentangle Don Tenorio, drenched in blood from crown to knees, but apparently unharmed, out from what remained of his two captors. Their bare backs looked like hamburger. He still clutched his green steel witness, whose slide was locked back on an empty mag. Ryan nodded approvingly. The Baron, or Alcalde, or whatever he was, might have been a scholar instead of a fighter, but when the caps were popping, he'd given a game account of himself. Ryan moved to Christie's side, slid an arm around her trim waist. She looked up at him. Her face was greenish pale.
I guess Mildred was right after all, lover. This was a bit too much exercise for me. Oh, God.
She slumped against him,